WGXC is a listener-supported community radio station, and it is also a new platform for presenting innovative experimental works on the air. Tune in, WGXC 90.7 FM, Agra, Hudson, Catskill, and points beyond. Listen to special programs of performance, words, sounds, and other rare and delicious items. Transmitting the arts all day every Saturday and weekdays after midnight. Here is there.
You are listening to Human Machine, a program that airs each Saturday on WGXC 90.7 FM. Research in various scientific fields examine a speculative next stage in human evolution. Many predict an imminent human transformation based on increasing computer processing speed and manufacture, which will merge technological and human architectures. In this series, we will present projects and research about the horizons of the human machine. The program alternates weekly between Jeremy Kelly's curation of machine systems influence composers and Maximilian Goldfarb's assembly of materials to depict the convergence of humans and technology. Episodes will be thematically arranged to cover topics such as autonomous vehicles, medicine, sexual relations, space and habitation, nanotechnology, slavery, warfare, labor, bioresearch, prosthetics and agriculture, all areas examined in relation to our subject of human-machine advancement.
Sex robots are anthropomorphized personal service androids, made specifically for sexual interaction with humans. They combine affective computing, sensory perception and software to emulate physiological responses with flesh-like silicone technology used in sex dolls. At present, sex robots are in their infancy because their function is based on the ability to respond to sensors, and not autonomy or the ability to think. However, as artificial intelligence becomes more sophisticated, sex robots are constantly improving. In time, sex robots will become physically identical to a woman, responsive to all senses, able to converse, imitate the full spectrum of human emotions, and emulate autonomous decision-making. Even though sex robots have a long way to go before facilitating the type of sexual interaction and companionship that sex robot enthusiasts hope for, ethical issues have already begun to emerge. Sex robot fanatics hope that in time and with the right technology, sex robots will be indistinguishable in the way they look, feel and react from real women. This will allow any man to live out needs or fantasies that would be difficult or impossible to actualize with a woman. Sex robots can be anticipated to serve three main applications. First, they can be used to assist with therapy or treatment for a diverse array of patients in hospitals or homes, including disabled individuals. The second use could be to stimulate physical or emotional companionship for individuals in society, not necessarily as part of treatment or therapy. Sex robots could be used for activities that individuals cannot or prefer not to engage in with other people because they are illegal, dangerous, or socially frowned upon. For example, a user that enjoys extremely violent or degrading sex may have difficulty finding human partners with whom to live out such acts. Another example is men who support the sex trade industry but would prefer to avoid the legal consequences or social stigma. In this category, sex robots could also have applications in the army or prisons to address the sexual desires of soldiers or convicts. Some proponents claim that functional uses of sex robots are beneficial for society and justify the use of sex robots. However, if we examine the deeper motivations of the user and the nature of the interaction, it becomes apparent that the harms caused by sex robots to the user, women in society outweigh any functional benefits. Sex robots are physical, interactive manifestations of women used for a sexual purpose. Female sex bots emulate the look and feel of a human woman who is programmed into submission. The sex femme does not have the ability to decline, criticize, or be dissatisfied with the user. In the interaction, sex robots are implicitly consenting to any physical act. The user can control the look, feel, and personality of the sex robot, as well as its reactions to various stimuli. A key element of sex-robot interaction is the removal of certain abilities to say no, to have needs, desires, and dislikes. Another is the inability to make choices and to eliminate certain uncomfortable or undesirable exchanges or qualities that tend to occur in men's interaction with women, such as the need to communicate, listen, compromise, and respect one another. Although sex robots do not currently have feelings or free will, their ability to enter one of the most physically and emotionally intimate areas of human life raises broader questions about ethics and morality. These questions are not focused on the sex robot as the victim of the harm, but rather on how the nature of the interaction between user and robot will cause harm to others. Sex robots result in moral and psychological harm to individual users and society. The harm is not necessarily apparent in terms of a perfectly defined, identifiable effect. Instead, it is discernible in the harmful effects on societal notions of consent in sex and intimacy. Sex robots accommodate users' existing antisocial tendencies, and through repetitive interaction, promote lies about women's humanity. Sex robots are interactive, physical representations of women, which serve as a means to the end of sexual gratification. Such robots are indistinguishable from women to the user. Moreover, because the robot has no choice but to consent to any activities initiated by the user, rape is eroticized. If sex robots become as technologically advanced as femme fanatics hope, men will not need to use force or fantasize to sexually control women, because the sex robot makes it a reality. Thus, the most problematic impact of sex robots in a society that is already facing challenges in achieving gender equality is the erosion of consent. This effect poses a danger to society that builds on and surpasses the harms attributed to pornography.
want to be treated like a machine. Look at me, machine, machine. The world is raining and my tears are falling. You tell me what to do. You only want to program me. I laugh when you laugh and cry on demand. Tell me what to do and program me, but I think I know better than you. Do the washing up, robot. Six for dinner tonight, robot. Clean the house, robot. I'm sick of it. My inner engine rebels. I want to go out, meet people, talk witty, fly jet planes, take over the government. Oh, it's so hard to be a robot. My hard disk rebels. Oh, I'm all in pieces. All my wires are coming out.
Is a robot designed for male enjoyment?
All over America, there are thousands of men with an unlikely obsession.
Scanning, scanning, scanning.
They dream of love and sex with a female robot.
I would like you now to start undressing.
Unit complies, master.
I would say that a man who mainly interacts with a robot is not being challenged in the way that a human-to-human relationship challenges us. It's not the norm.
I am not a person. I am an electronic device.
My perfect robot companion would be 5'5" tall, nice figure, hourglass figure. But then when we get into, you know, what would her face look like, what would her hair look like, I would imagine that those would be interchangeable. The idea that, you know, that you can remove, like, a limb, you know, like you can hit a button and the arm comes off, or you peel the face off or whatever, and there's circuitry and, you know, everything underneath. It's just intriguing that something can look so human without being human at all.
But Delosian doesn't just want a fembot for sex. He also believes that it could be the ideal romantic partner.
I would have it programmed like a companion, to know what I like, to know what I don't like. It's the whole idea of man taking charge. It's almost as close to human slavery as you can get. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but I'm saying that there is a slight attraction to one person being in charge of another human-looking entity.
In a small industrial building on the outskirts of Dallas, one man is working on making Delosian's dream a reality. His name is Doug Hines, and he's building Roxy, which he hopes to be the world's first sex robot.
Here, let me show you. This is Roxy. This is Roxy's face, which is our model face. And as you could see, the beauty that she has, I think, is quite striking. Obviously, she's sitting on a desk right now, and sorry about that, Roxy, that you're kind of detached from your head. This is Roxy, too.
Doug has been working on Roxy for 7 years. It may look crude, but he's got ambitious plans for his sex robot.
Now, you'll notice that she has multiple points of movement. She's going to have the eyebrows, the eyes, the eyelids. She's going to be able to smile. She even has a special face when she has her moment of ecstasy, if you know what I mean. Her pelvic area thrusts when she's being intimate. We also have a very large tongue, which I'll show you in a moment, that's very erotic. This is the future. This is so cool.
Doug is planning on unveiling Roxy to the world in Las Vegas at North America's largest adult trade show, and Fembot enthusiasts are eager to see their potential future companion.
I think Doug is a pioneer in so much as he kind of started the revolution of a robot that can have sex.
Humanized robots explore human sexuality. A computerized human nervous system function emulator, HNSFE, has been expanded to include elements of courtship, pair bonding, erotic stimulation and sexual intercourse, producing a human sexual function emulator, HSFE. The HNSFE is a biologically inspired, open systems, multitasking, multiprocessor, IEEE 1275 program which imitates many neural cognitive operations of the human brain. It is the control element of the author's robotic android with neural network, intellect and emotions, Annie. For this experiment, two artificial people were created. A male, Manny, and a female, Fanny. Their personality and memory files were customized to represent a stereotypical man and woman. The experimental apparatus included a display and camera for each individual to enable facial gesture expression and recognition. Audio output and input was provided for speech synthesis and recognition. Bidirectional optical and radio frequency back channels were supplied to facilitate subconscious interpersonal communications. Each individual was supplied with simulated erogenous zones and the means to stimulate them. Elements of normal human courtship as described by Devereux, 1903, was included in the behavioral portion of the simulator, as well as the four-phase model of the human sexual response cycle described by Masters and Johnson, 1966, for each gender. Depending on initial conditions set by the observer and a random factor, the male-female pair would show romantic interest in each other, engage in sexual behavior and attain an orgasmic outcome. If the results of an encounter were positive, subsequent encounters occurred with increased frequency. The reverse was also true. The HNSFE was shown to be adaptable to realistic emulation of human male-female courtship and sexual functioning. Reproduction of new artificial entities via the HSFE following simulated mating is discussed.
When 45-year-old engineer Tabor arrives home, it's not his wife or girlfriend that's waiting for him. They are love dolls, or sex dolls, neatly and quietly sitting on the sofa in his living room. He says to them, "Hi, I'm home." Some may think it's a bit freaky, but Tabor says he just cannot love real women. Tabor is one of the increasing number of Japanese men who have given up on dating or marrying women in the real world and turned to these dolls for love, affection, and sex. Tabor has spent more than $170,000 over the past decade to buy nearly 100 of these sex dolls. 9 different kinds of love dolls are made at this Tokyo factory, Some high-end models are made of silicon, and they are not cheap either. Her name is Koyuki, and she's one of more than 20 super realistic sex dolls displayed in this showroom. A metal skeleton and 35 joints inside her allow her to move like a real woman.
Originally, when I first got her, I called her my synthetic girlfriend. But it's actually progressed to the point where it's like, you know, she's my wife.
37-year-old Dave Cat from Detroit says he has been in a relationship with his sex doll for more than 10 years. And it's in it, or in her, that he found his better half.
Just let her sleep. It's not even worth getting her out of bed at this point.
These days, Dave Cat's bond with the doll seems like a joke to many. Artificial intelligence engineer Doug Hines believes that he created the perfect alternative for those who, for different reasons, can't or are too busy or too lazy to connect with human beings.
We created like a bridge, a gap between, you know, going and maybe going out with someone else, you know, just meeting someone in a bar or what have you, and just randomly maybe picking up a social disease. Instead of doing that, you could have a sex robot that would be your companion and not only listen to you, talk to you, interact with you.
The Japanese are even more serious about robots. Every new model there looks more lifelike. With the surge of interest in robots, lawyers are starting to look into legal implications of the possibility that these sex robots can break up marriages. Psychologists, in the meantime, warn robots could transform human notions of love and sexuality forever.
While general relations between robots and humans are important, there is one issue that could easily be in the forefront of the robot ethics discussion: sex. Henrik Christensen is a member of the European Robotics Research Network and stated in 2006 that he expects that people are going to be having sex with robots within 5 years. QTD. In Habersham, the expectations in regard to robot's ability to provide sexual pleasure for humans could change the sexual tendencies of the world. It will be no surprise if the adult entertainment industry were to seize the opportunity robotics will soon provide, as they have with past technological advancements, namely, robots designed specifically for pleasure. In fact, this is exactly what has begun to happen, confirming that Christensen's prediction was correct. In January 2010, at the Adult Entertainment Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada, Douglas Hines introduced Roxy to the world. CNN journalist Brandon Griggs comments that, to some men, she might seem like the perfect woman. She's a willowy 5 feet 7 and 120 pounds. She'll chat with you endlessly about your interests. And she'll have sex whenever you please. As long as her battery doesn't run out, Griggs. Roxy is scheduled to ship later this year. And while a price tag of $7,000 may deter many potential customers, Hines claims that pre-orders have been rolling in, Griggs. Moreover, if the product reaches mass production, the price will surely drop. Inevitably, the days will soon be upon us when people seek out robots for sexual pleasure on a larger scale, and why not?
how do you feel about marrying a robot? Actually marrying and consummating the marriage, I should point out. It may sound far-fetched, but there are those who believe it's really not that long before this will happen. Think about it. Millions of dollars are being invested by some of the world's largest companies to create machines that are more and more human-like in appearance and that do more than just build cars or vacuum floors. In fact, we're already in an age where robots are capable of all kinds of things that, up until a few years ago, we thought were only human behaviors, like walking, running, playing musical instruments, cuddling, and even providing companionship. The man who got us thinking about these issues is our guest today. Author Dr. David Levy joins me now from our studios in London. An internationally recognized expert on artificial intelligence, he first made his name as a master chess player who even played against the world's leading chess computers. Since then, he's written extensively on intimate relationships with robotic partners and is author of Love and Sex with Robots, The Evolution of the Human-Robot Relationship, a book looking closely at how that human-robot intimacy is likely to develop. Dr. Levy, welcome to the show.
Thank you and good evening.
Good to have you with us. And I have to start by asking you, I think one thing that surprises a lot of people about your book is not so much the idea that humans will have sex with robots, but it's the idea they will actually fall in love with them. And I wonder what basic premise you found that on.
Well, I looked at a lot of the psychology literature, investigations into why humans fall in love. And I noticed that a lot of the main reasons seem to me to be paralleled in the way that robots are being developed and that they will develop in the future. I think that the causes are very similar. And so I think it's quite likely that humans will start falling in love with robots probably in about 30 or 40 years from now, when the robots are sophisticated, have personalities, have sophisticated emotions, and can carry on conversations at a human-like level.
It's interesting because in your book you write, and just a quick quote from there, says the robots of the mid-21st century will also possess human-like or superhuman-like consciousness and emotions. Now, is it that they will have emotions or just simply display emotions? Because there's a difference.
Yes, you're quite right. They will have artificial emotions, but they won't be real in the sense that we understand them. On the other hand, they'll display the emotions in such a convincing manner that we won't be able to tell the difference. So it'll be just as good as having a relationship with a human from that point of view.
Which is difficult at the best of times. But I have to put an email question that we got about the issue of relationships with robots from Barb Sonia from Springfield here in the USA. And she writes, sex and companionship are two different things. The aging and elderly population of the world does suffer from the lack of both sex and companionship in many ways. But what is acceptable for one society may not be acceptable for another. And I wonder to what extent you see that idea that, you know, certain sort of ethics and moral values might really cloud the matter down the road.
Yes, I think that's definitely a possibility. For example, in Japan, they're far more receptive to robots than the peoples of most other countries. And I think that in general, Japan and the United States are going to lead the way in the field of advanced robots used for companionship, friendship, love, sex, and very sophisticated type relationships. I think in some countries and some cultures, particularly some of the Catholic countries, might be more opposed to the idea of marriage and sex with robots.
Actually, when you say that, I mean, is there any need to marry a robot as such? What would be the reason to have a religiously covered relationship with a robot?
Well, one could ask the same question about human marriage. I mean, is there really any need to marry a human? Nowadays, there are so many partnerships out of wedlock that it doesn't seem necessary at all. I think it's really just a question of personal taste.
There's an interesting email that came from Mohammed in London, who puts a humorous angle on it. He says, as a Muslim, can I have four robot wives? Now, it may seem silly, but I have to ask you, what is the likely scenario when it comes to having more than one robot partner? Because if they display emotions as such, jealousy is also an emotion.
I think the key to remember is that the robot's actions and performance are entirely software driven, and if one programs a robot to become accustomed to the idea of being one of four wives, then the robot will be quite content and will exhibit perfect contentment, and there's no reason why your listener shouldn't have four wives if he wants to.
I would hate to see the divorce proceedings, but I have to ask you, you know, you mentioned that you looked into certain factors when it came to, you know, to writing the book, when you looked at human psychology and so on. What in particular, what parameters were you looking at you know, both from the side of robotic development and from the side of how humans react to developing emotions for inanimate objects?
Well, humans develop emotions for inanimate objects from a very early age. Children, babies develop emotional attachments to their blankets, to their teddy bears, and so on. So this is a well-known phenomenon that's been studied for a number of years. The kind of parallels I was talking about earlier, perhaps I should give you one or two examples. One of the reasons why we humans tend to fall in love is because of similarities between ourselves and the person we're falling in love with. So if, for example, we meet someone who has the same hobbies and interests as ourselves, or the same political ideas, the same kind of moral code, the same kind of ethics, perhaps the same religious or family background, it makes it more likely that we're going to fall in love with them. That's just one example. Now, with a robot, of course, you can program it to appear to have any kind of personality that you wish, any kind of background knowledge that you wish. And so it will be relatively easy in the future, when robots have huge memories, to program them to be just like human beings with various personalities and knowledge bases.
I'm going to show our viewers a clip because, you know, there is some degree of companionship already offered by robotic pets. And I want to show our viewers a clip of Paro, which is a robotic seal that's becoming popular with the elderly in Japan. Is it from Dr. Levy, is there anything that you know from that documents the sort of physiological and psychological improvement in patients who have even a robotic pet like this? Is there anything documenting that?
Yes, there is. I discuss it in the book. Psychologists have found that patients, particularly elderly people, their general feeling, their happiness, level of happiness improves when they are given robotic pets. And the Japanese government is actually investing huge amounts of money into the development of robots to be used to take care of the elderly. The Japanese are extremely worried because their elderly population is increasing steadily as a percentage of the overall population, and there are enormous social problems on the horizon if some way isn't found to take care of the elderly more than they can do at the moment. The US government is also looking at this, and there's research going on in the States as well at some universities. But it's Japan, I think, that's leading the way, and that's why the seal, for example, was developed in Japan and appears to be quite successful.
In fact, we have another clip of Paro here, which talks about a couple who no longer were able to keep pets because as they got older it was harder to care for them. Here's another clip of Paro. It's interesting, the seal has a pacifier, a dummy, as a charger, so it actually makes it look even that much more cuter. And I have to ask you, though, when it comes to, you know, having something like a pet, for a lot of people there's the experience with a live pet of seeing it grow from a kitten or a puppy or whatever into an adult state, and then even to some degree the maturing of the pet with aging. Now, with a robot, of course, it could be programmed, but physically it's going to still look the same, isn't it?
One would think so at the moment, but one doesn't know what kind of technologies for the physical development of robots might be possible in the future to actually give them the appearance of growing physically as well as emotionally and intellectually.
I've got a caller on the line from London. Anwar, your question for Dr. Levy, please.
Oh, hi, good evening, Grace.
Hi.
I just want to ask him, you know, when you have a relationship with an animal or with a human being, there is a soul involved. How are you going to create soul in a robot?
Okay.
Well, there are researchers currently working on the development of what's called artificial consciousness, which I think is very much what you're talking about. This is a field that's relatively new. It's only really in the last 4 or 5 years that there's been a lot of effort put into this subject, but already there are 3 books on the subject of robot consciousness or artificial consciousness, and I think this is something that will happen. It will be an artificial form of consciousness, but as I said earlier, if it appears to be the real thing, then in effect it's as good as the real thing. What's important is that it's convincing.
There's an email that came in on the subject of the Japanese. Now I know that you know, they've been moving very aggressively in this field, as you mentioned. Sally from Texas, actually, in the US, says robots became popular in Japan because of animistic tendencies brought on by Eastern religions. So I don't think that they will have the same success in Europe. What's your view on that?
I understand what she's saying, and certainly the animistic tendencies have had a big bearing on the rapidity with which the Japanese have taken to robots. On the other hand, nowadays everyone knows about robots, and the development of the type of robot I write about in my book is going to happen not overnight. It's something that's going to happen over years and decades, and people will become accustomed to it, and as they become accustomed to it, so I think they'll become curious about what the robots are going to be able to do, and that will make a lot of people attracted to the idea, so that when these robots are actually ready and available and on the market for sale or for hire, I think a lot of people will already be eager to try them out.
Well, interestingly enough, we've touched on the fact that Japan has major issues with an aging population and diminishing young population, which obviously is going to have an impact not just on, you know, the sort of having an elderly population to care for, but the fact the labor force is diminishing. And this email that came in from April in the Philippines touches on that. April says, to what extent do you think that robots will become a rational alternative to opening up borders to immigration, especially in societies that have issues with shrinking and aging populations like Japan?
I'm sorry, I didn't really understand the question about the borders.
I guess the idea that, you know, instead of opening up borders to immigrants, there is the option with more advanced robots to actually creating a workforce without having to import it, so to speak. And I wonder what April is saying is, to what extent you think this would be a rational alternative to immigrants?
Well, if that was the only reason for opening the borders to immigrants, then one could argue that robots might be a better alternative. But I don't see robots as being just workers or slaves. Far from it. I see one of the greatest benefits from robots will be the social benefits that we have by introducing many more entities into the world that are friendly and that like us and that behave in ways so that we enjoy their company. And so I think opening up the borders will really be something that will be done because we want robots as our friends, our companions, our lovers. I don't think it's just going to be a master-slave relationship. There are people who disagree with me, but I think the main purpose of robots in the future, humanoid robots, is going to be as our companions, friends, and lovers.
Now, it's interesting, you and I, when we had a chat before the show, you were saying that you're not really a science fiction buff as such, and in fact, wanted to make sure you stayed away from anything science fiction in this book because you want to concentrate on the hard facts and how this is a serious subject that you know, is taking a certain line of development. Now, I wonder, though, you know, to what extent people's expectations have really grown because of watching science fiction movies and, you know, like iRobot and so on. And to what extent, you know, that will shape perhaps how we as society develop those robots to work for us?
I think that will definitely have an effect. There's no doubt at all that people's expectations have been affected by science fiction literature and films. And to some extent, of course, when people see a robot able to perform some amazing task, they'll want to see that in a real robot in the future. But as I mentioned to you earlier, I really want my work to be treated in the way that it is, as serious scientific research. And I just felt when writing the book that if I'd alluded to science fiction too much, people might have thought I was just really writing an extension of science fiction and not taking my work seriously.
One thing, though, that science fiction, or at least Hollywood's you know, interpretation of some of the developments that might happen, what it does do is it raises the issue of some of the issues that might come up. And one of them is that even though you can program robots, as they develop emotions or intelligence, you know, sort of active intelligence, they could also, to some degree, rebel. They could take a different line from that programming. To what extent do you think that's possible?
I think it's possible, and I think it's a very serious fear. And of course, in the science fiction literature, there are countless stories of robots that effectively took over. And this is something we have to be very careful about in the future. We've seen what a terrible effect computer hackers can have, all the damage they can do by hacking into secure computer systems and into people's email. And I think in the future, we have to be very careful that unscrupulous people don't start causing havoc by modifying the software and the memories of robots. There'll have to be special laws to take care of it, and there'll have to be measures taken to guard against it. I don't know what the answers are, but I do raise these questions in the book.
Right. And, you know, one interesting angle a viewer took on the development of robots came in an email from Saba in Eritrea. And Saba wrote in saying, in Japan, robots are a product of popular culture, so science fiction inspired real science. In the US, we see any advance or breakthrough being made in robotic technology is from the military. Does this result from the very pugnacious culture of the West?
One could say so in a way. I mean, it's certainly true that much of the artificial intelligence and robotics research in the US is funded by the US government, by various defense departments. This is simply because the defense departments want to be able to use robots for military purposes, and so they're willing to plow massive amounts of research money into universities and research institutes in order to develop robots, even though a lot of the development work is not being done for military purposes. This is simply a fact of life, and there are some robotics experts who in fact refuse to accept military funding. But the majority of people working in this field do accept military funding, right, partly because it's a big source of funding, and partly because they're not themselves working on products that have military bearing.
I have to ask you, just with 30 seconds to go, Dr. Levy, you yourself, as a master chess player, played against some of the top computer chess programs, and I wonder to what extent they developed any kind of human characteristics to which you latched onto. What was your relationship with those computers?
Well, certainly the programs I played, each of them had its own personality, and I tried wherever possible to take advantage of faults in their personalities. I was able to do it for quite a while, but then eventually they got too strong for me.
Well, we thank you very much. A fascinating book, sir, and thank you very much for joining us to talk about it.
You're welcome.
This is the sound of the future. It's music. It's made by robots. Sexy robots. So sexy. Sexy robots. I'm sexy too.
Yes, you are.
Do my robot arms turn you on?
They do.
What about now that they are spinning around at 300 RPM? That's a sexy kind of speed for robots. I'll never crash when I'm tapping that ass. It's true, I'm very quick at calculations, but I always finish after you. Parallel processing is something that I can be professing skills in. Baby, I'm touching my robot groin.
I like that.
I'm touching my robot groin.
Continue.
Now my robot bottom is in your face. My robot bottom, can you see it?
Let's interface.
Oh baby.
I guess I've been going to the flea market for like 15 years. I started going there and buying like watch parts and stuff like that to use in models, you know, for robotic stuff. When I'm finding Barbies or G.I. Joes or a robot, you know, things, I don't want them to be too loose or, you know, I don't care if they're banged up or the hair is cut off and stuff, because I gotta trim them anyway. Some of them I just use for parts.
You have the Barbies with the hingeable legs?
You help? A longer hair. I finished it.
Right. Yeah, that's what you do with them.
Oh. Well, I gotta cut all the hair off.
Is that three? Mm-hmm. I found about maybe, I don't know, 75, 100 hinged, posable figures of all kinds. I moved in 69. It's more like a warehouse than a decorated place. I mean, it's decorated with junk from movies and still photos and prop stuff that a lot of the stuff around here I handmade, which makes it painful to throw out. And I've thrown out a bunch of it, but there's still way too much stuff. Yeah, most Barbies are re-sculpted. You know, you sand them down, you know, add a little to the cranium and cover up the ears and put a straight nose on it and big robot jaw. You can smooth it out with a spit. And then it's, the paint job is starts usually black enamel. So I can get a little, silver highlighting. I'm not a writer at all, but I wrote about the robots in a munitions factory, and I got fed up with it, and I just thought, I'll do a porno movie of robots, and that won't need any plot, you know? This is Madam Robot's artificial insemination machine, and she has her on lever, and then this sort of half android comes down and grabs her. And the c*** isn't attached to him, but it comes out like that, back and forth, and it's a jism bottle up here. It comes in at the right time. And this guy turns the generator. Into the fallopian tubes, and they're on a hunt for eggs. Oh, and these sperms, they can't even wait for the eggs. They're like each other. Robot sperms, robot eggs, and then egg dividing and forming a baby robot, and then a robot birth. I haven't really incorporated any, of my own sex life into this. I don't, it doesn't equate. It's not funny enough. It's like human porn movies, where they're like for display, and it is kind of cold. It isn't a love story. The only reason they need to have sex is because it's like a parallel human universe, made of robots that, ape human stuff.
Do you ever get horny when you're making these?
It doesn't get you very hot, actually. And I don't think it'll get the audience very hot either. You never know. There could be some perv cases out there.
The robots will be designed to be completely customizable to satisfy the tastes of every customer. The greater adoption of sex robots could very likely lead to a 9 drop in both prostitution and sexually transmitted diseases, which would be seen as a positive by many. However, There are also negatives to the adoption of using robots for sexual pleasure, which must be carefully considered. As a result of on-demand sexual intercourse, sexual addictions are likely to skyrocket. Furthermore, it could lead to the degradation of the traditional view on sexual intercourse holding a place of sanctity within marriage. Some of these issues hinge on whether the robots are mere machines and not a new mechanical organism. When laws are passed in regard to human-robot sexual relations, what should the legislation contain? Clearly, if the robots are a form of life, then it would be wrong for humans to have free reign with them. On the one hand, it could be seen as a form of rape, and on the other hand, interspecies intercourse is frowned upon by most societies, if not forbidden in their law. While many people will abstain from the use of sex robots because of objections arising from religious, moral, and philosophical beliefs, many people would find pleasure in them. For these reasons, it is essential that the ethical issues regarding robotic sex begin to be discussed in societies before it becomes a widespread reality. Conclusion: the root question around which all ethical issues involving human-robot relations revolve is whether humans can peacefully exist with another intelligent species. If we look back into history, it seems doubtful that humans could accomplish this. An excellent example of this came with the discovery in the Americas and the exploitation and slaughter of the Native Americans who lived there. In that case, where both sides were human, it took hundreds of years before peace could be reached, and even then at the cost of countless lives. While it remains a matter of debate, I personally do not believe that society will ever accept the idea that androids are an equal or greater form of life than humans. Human nature is then prideful, and I do not believe human society as a whole could handle not being on top. No matter what happens, upcoming technological advancements will lead us to consider closely just what constitutes life.
Thank you. Saturday mornings to subsequent episodes, where we continue our conversation on the nature of being in an age of human-machine evolution.